Lebanese protesters scuffle with police in Beirut after Prime Minister-designate Saad al-Hariri failed to form a new government. Colombian police say mercenaries involved in the assassination of Haiti's president were hired to capture him and hand him over to the US. Also ahead, at least 67 people die in heavy rains and flooding in western Germany and Belgium as one of the worst weather disasters in decades hits the region. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story for this hour: protesters clash with security forces in Beirut after Lebanese Prime Minister designate Saad al-Hariri abandoned his bid to form a new government. Lebanese security forces say a soldier was injured during the clashes. Demonstrators blocked roads and set fire to rubbish bins and tires. Hariri quit forming a government after consultations with President Michel Aoun, saying the two could not reach a consensus. That marks another setback for Beirut's efforts to end almost 9 months of political deadlock amid the country's economic crisis. The country has been without a formal government since the deadly explosion in Beirut last August. Lebanon faces what the World Bank calls one of the worst economic crises in modern history. Political commentator Dernijal Jejic says political deadlock in Lebanon is partly due to the sectarian ruling system in the country.
One of the reasons why Hariri was not able to form any government is, of course, based on sectarian representative system of the parliament in Lebanon and the particular unwritten rules that there are in the distribution of the sects within the formation of a government. So there are various components that need to be taken into consideration, none of which have been able to work out. And this has been a repetitive story because it's not the first time that he resigns. As was mentioned, he resigned in 2017 when he was kidnapped by Saudi Arabia. He resigned again in 2019 when mass protests broke out against his government. So the crisis that Lebanon is faced with is not only the recent one of Hariri being unable to form a government, but it has been ongoing. Has this put the country in a situation where it is right now, with a daily increase in poverty, with the inflation skyrocketing, and a political deadlock that does not seem to go anywhere near a solution?
Israel's new Prime Minister Naftali Bennett says has relaunched a controversial project to construct over 3,400 settler units in the occupied West Bank. The so-called E1 project involves construction of the units at an area where hundreds of Palestinians live in Bedouin communities. Mona Kandil reports from the occupied West Bank.
Israel has advanced a major settler building project known as E1. Israel's new Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, has relaunched the controversial project for the construction of over 3,412 settler units in the occupied West Bank to connect the largest Israeli settlement of Ma'ale Adumim to the West Jerusalem Al-Quds. The project was first pushed forward by former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Palestinians have slammed the move as seriously dangerous.
Now, as Bennett bring it on the table, it is just to show the settlers that he is better than Netanyahu. He's continued the main strategy and the ideology of the settlements in the West Bank. Netanyahu has been freezing or a little bit slowed down the working in the E1, but they are now pushing it forward. This is a very dangerous colonial project in the West Bank. This will be totally cut off and divided the West Bank between the north and the south. So it's very sensitive, very strategic.
Israeli authorities have been seeking to expel tens of thousands of Palestinian Bedouins to other Palestinian towns since long time ago because the area has been allocated to E1 settlement constructions. This area sits on roughly 15 square kilometers of land northeast of Jerusalem Al-Quds. For years, the Israeli regime has tried to dismantle the Bedouin communities to make way for its massive E1 settlement project in East Jerusalem Al-Quds. The planned Israeli building in E1 would effectively cut the West Bank in half and prevent Palestinian sovereign contiguity between northern and southern West Bank.
The project comes in line with Israel's annexation plan. The new regime in Israel is seeking to disrupt any territorial integrity of a future Palestinian state based on the 1967 borders. To this end, it displaces more Palestinians in violation of all international laws.
Palestinians say that it's very clear that Bennett is even worse than Netanyahu, as he started rapidly to carry out his agenda to expand illegal settlements in the occupied territories even more vigorously. During Netanyahu's term in office, Israeli-only roads were built as first step in constructing settlements in the controversial E1 zone. Now Bennett has revived the plan and the actual construction for E1. Palestinians warned this project would practically cut the occupied West Bank in half. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Elsewhere, Colombia's police helping Haiti in the investigation of President Jovenel Moïse's assassination have made new revelations about the operation, saying the initial intention of the gunmen was to capture the president alive.
The captured Colombian ex-military officers claim that the plan was to arrest the president and hand him over to the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. The information we have is that they would have been divided into two groups of approximately seven Colombians, the first entering the house of the president and the others providing security.
Colombian police added that they are now looking for three people who have been in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Meanwhile, Haitian police said the murder was planned in the neighboring Dominican Republic. They announced that the main bodyguard and three other members of the slain president's security staff were arrested. Colombian intelligence agents are cooperating with Haitian authorities in investigating the July 7th murder of Moïse. Two Americans of Haitian descent and 26 Colombians took part in the operation at the president's home in Port-au-Prince. Political commentator Layo Sazdi says those who plotted to assassinate President Jovenel Moïse want to deceive the investigators and public opinion.
It looks like whoever ordered this crime, the murder of the president of Haiti, wanted investigators, public opinion, to get the wrong idea of who might be really behind the murder. Using Colombians, then the first impression will be, well, that maybe those who ordered the murder came from Colombia, that the idea was, the plan was created or brainstormed, let's say, in Colombia, which I don't think. I mean, everything is possible, but I'll try to explain myself.
A Canadian Indigenous group says it expects more graves to be found near a former residential school where 215 unmarked graves have already been discovered. The group called on the government and the Catholic Church, which ran the school, to release records to help identify the graves near Kamloops Indian Residential School. It noted that ground surveying research in areas close to the school shows there could be as many as 200 potential burial sites there. The group added that the number could increase as much of the area has not been surveyed yet. So far, more than 1,100 graves have been discovered at former residential schools across the country. The Canadian government has admitted that physical and sexual abuse was rampant in the schools. Author and journalist Robert Fantina says the Canadian government must do its utmost to make up for the experiences the First Nations have gone through.
These innocent children and their families suffered horrifically. The children were ripped from their families under penalty. There was a law at the time. And then these innocent children were abused physically, sexually, emotionally, separated from their families, separated from their culture, their language, and all this among the most horrendous abuse that one can imagine. The Canadian government can't undo this, but it can do everything possible to find the victims, to aid the survivors, and to compensate the First Nations people for the horrible things the government did to them.
Turning elsewhere, at least 67 people have been killed as torrential rains pour on Western Europe, causing widespread flooding. Germany has reported 59 deaths, while Belgium has confirmed 8. Dozens of people remain missing. German officials expect water levels on the Rhine and Moselle rivers to rise even further over the next 2 days. Some 200,000 households are left without power in western parts of Germany. The army has been deployed to help with rescue operations. Evacuation orders have been issued for parts of the region. Neighboring Luxembourg and the Netherlands have also been hit by floods in one of the worst disasters to hit the region in decades. The United Nations Refugee Agency says the situation of the Eritrean refugees living in Ethiopia's Tigray region is rapidly worsening. The agency voiced concern over the escalation of fighting in the region in the past days. It said tens of thousands of Eritrean refugees are now fearful for their lives due to the insecurity and ongoing movement of troops in the area. Local fighters in Tigray have been engaged in a conflict with the government troops in the area since last November. Nearly 100,000 refugees from Eritrea were living in camps in the area when the fighting erupted. And the South African government says 117 people have been killed in the country's week-long unrest as security forces struggle to quell the violence. The figure shows a sharp rise from the toll of 72 announced the previous day. A government official said the commercial hub of Johannesburg was now relatively calm. However, the KwaZulu-Natal province remains volatile. Meanwhile, South Africa's army is preparing to deploy 25,000 troops to assist police in tackling the emergency. South Africa plunged into chaos after former President Jacob Zuma handed himself in to serve a 15-month jail term for contempt of court. Authorities say hundreds of people have been arrested in connection with looting, arson, and violence.
South Africa has been in utter chaos since last Thursday, a day after former President Jacob Zuma handed himself into authorities to serve a 15-month jail term. Zuma was convicted of contempt of court after he defied an order to testify before a judicial commission probing allegations of fraud during his years in office. The former leader's imprisonment sparked protests across much of South Africa. The unrest soon escalated into mayhem. In the past 7 days, more than 800 retail shops and over 200 shopping malls have been looted. Government estimates suggest hundreds of millions of dollars of goods have been purloined or destroyed. That has sparked fears of a looming humanitarian crisis, with authorities warning that parts of South Africa may soon be running short of basic provisions. Analysts believe this could be a further blow to the nation's economy already reeling from the coronavirus pandemic.
What can come out of this, of course, would be even further economic crises in South Africa amid this COVID-19 third wave, which has impacted South Africa more than any other country on the African continent.
The South African Army has already deployed thousands of troops to help overstretched police restore order. That proving insufficient, the government has called another 25,000 Army Reserve troops to tackle the emergency. In addition, people in areas worst hit by the violence have taken up arms and formed vigilante groups to protect their neighborhoods. South Africa is experiencing one of its worst crises since the end of apartheid regime in early 1990s. With the former president in prison, high unemployment, and much of the country plagued by crime, it is hard to imagine an easy path back to normalcy.
Meanwhile, the UK has recorded over 48,000 more coronavirus cases, its highest daily tally since mid-January. The country also reported 63 COVID-related fatalities, a higher figure than a day earlier. UK health officials have so far recorded over 5.1 million COVID-19 cases, with more than 128,000 deaths. The spike in coronavirus cases comes as the government is preparing to remove almost all COVID-related restrictions as of next week. The more contagious Delta variant is also largely blamed for the spike. South Korea has imposed its strictest COVID-19 prevention measures as it battles a fourth wave of the virus with record numbers of cases. While officials have advised people to stay at home, most businesses, cafes and restaurants remain open. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
South Korea has been hit hard by a fourth wave of the COVID-19 pandemic with new daily cases over 1,000 for the past week. More than 50% of the recent new cases have been the more contagious Delta variant. The government has issued a number of restrictions and guidelines, including banning gatherings of more than two people, other than family, after 6 p.m.
Please refrain from going out or holding social gatherings and abide by the disinfection guidelines wherever you are. Even if you don't have symptoms, please protect yourself and your loved ones by getting tested. We can and must overcome this crisis. The government will do its best.
Bae Hyung-won and his wife operate a small seafood restaurant in Incheon, just outside of Seoul. He diligently disinfects his restaurant, adhering to social distancing protocols and other government guidelines. He says a lot of businesses in the neighborhood are just hanging on.
The current situation is affecting us tremendously. Up to now, the first to third waves of the coronavirus weren't so bad. But as soon as the fourth wave started, from the first day, the number of customers plunged by 80 to 90%.
As many countries around the world are now opening up, South Korea is under more pressure from a restive public to respond more effectively to the outbreak. Young people have been especially critical, as they will wait months for their shots amid shortages of vaccine supplies. The South Korean government had set a goal of November to achieve herd immunity. Currently, about 12% of the population has been fully vaccinated, while health officials emphasize the importance of the next 2 months in containing the recent wave of infections. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Wraps up our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump said he became worse after two impeachment trials, both of which ended in acquittal, as Republican leaders grappled with the best way to deal with the bombastic ex-president who continues to spread claims about his 2020 election loss. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Michael Sennel, writer. This article is published under the heading, Trump Says Being Impeached Twice Didn't Change Him. He said, I became worse. Stay tuned For the details of this article, please. Former U.S. President Donald Trump recently said he became worse after he was impeached by the House of Representatives twice during his 4 years in office. Trump, during a speech at annual Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, compared calls for his impeachment to calls for former Attorney General William Barr's impeachment. Two ethics groups in October called on the House to begin impeachment proceedings against Barr, arguing that he used his position for political reasons to help Trump. Steve Cohen, who sits on House Judiciary Committee, called for Barr to be impeached last June, alleging that he was not following the rule of law. Trump, during his speech to a crowd of Republican supporters in Dallas, said Barr became a different man following the calls for his impeachment, while the former president didn't become different. Trump said, garnering applause from the crowd, he became a different man when the Democrats viciously stated that they wanted to impeach him. They went wild. We want to impeach him. We're gonna impeach Bill Barr. We're gonna impeach him. We became different. I understand that. I didn't become different. I got impeached twice. I became worse. He emphasized, I became worse. Trump was impeached by the lower chamber twice during his 4-year tenure in the White House, first in December 2019 and then again in January 2021, making him the first president in the U.S. history to be impeached twice. The House first impeached the former president on two articles, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, in connection with his dealings with Ukraine. In the final days of his presidency, he was impeached again, that time for incitement of an insurrection following the deadly January 6 attack on the Capitol. He was acquitted on all charges by the Senate. Trump, following his second acquittal in February 2021, said the impeachment effort was yet another phase of the greatest witch hunt in the history of the U.S. It is a sad commentary on our times that one political party in America is given a free pass to denigrate the rule of law, defame law enforcement, cheer mobs, excuse rioters, and transform justice into a tool of political vengeance and persecute, blacklist, cancel, and suppress all people and viewpoints with whom or which they disagree, Trump wrote in a statement. Governors' races see flood of pro-Trump candidates and Biden under pressure to pick new breed of federal prosecutors. He added, I always have and always will be a champion for the unwavering rule of law. The heroes of law enforcement and the right of Americans to peacefully and honorably debate the issues of the day without malice and without hate. During his speech at CPAC, the former president also opined on the surge of migrants at the border, protecting the Second Amendment and the lawsuit he recently filed against big tech companies. he did not reveal if he will wage another bid for the presidency in 2024, but he did vow to take back control of the House, Senate, and the White House.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends. And here is a wise saying from the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali Ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, worth contemplating upon. The best friend is good mannerism. It is the title of the record book of the believers.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer, Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
علامه طباطبایی 40 سال زندگی متأهلانه داشت.
علامه محمد حسین طباطبایی, the author of the famous exegesis of the Holy Quran, Al-Mizan, lived with his wife for 40 years until she passed away. When علامه طباطبایی heard the news of his wife, thus he fainted, and from that time on he had the heart disease for the rest of his life. He cried very much for his loss. He was told by his friends and family, "You are a scholar, a faqih, a mufassir or exegete of the Holy Quran. Why do you act in such a manner? Death is for everyone, including your wife."
علامه طباطبایی میفرمونه که این گریه من که اعتراض به خدا نیست که.
علامه طباطبایی answered, "My intolerance and shed of tears upon my wife's death is not because of my complaint towards Allah. It is for her loyalty and kindness towards me. For 40 years, she did not break my heart even for a moment. My shedding tears is for losing the efforts that she made in supporting me to do my researches and studies. My name is on Al-Mizan Exegesis of the Holy Quran, but in fact, this tafsir was written by two people, me and my wife, who supported me during all these years." Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
Maybe kittens are considered the cutest baby animals by many of us, but just wait to see this baby hippo, which was born during a full moon. The male calf was born in a Mexican zoo last month. He weighs 30 kilos upon birth. Since then, he has spent most of his time bonding with his mother. The vets in the zoo say he is healthy, playful, strong, and a bit hyperactive. They say some of his habits are surprisingly similar to that of a horse or a dolphin. Generally, reproduction among zoo hippos is not a common practice. Therefore, newborn calves are signs of high quality of the lives and habitats of their parents. A zoo in central France is welcoming the birth of a male giraffe after 15 months of waiting. The calf is named after Melman, the giraffe character in the Madagascar movie franchise. He was born on Sunday in a Bouval Zoo park. He is 170 centimeters tall and weighs 55 kilograms. Zookeepers say Melman is a special baby.
A giraffe birth here. It's our second birth since we've had the group of females established for a few years. So for us, it's still quite an important and exceptional event because it's not every day that we have a giraffe birth.
The giraffe keeper say Melman stood on his feet for the first time 45 minutes after being born. Since zoos have opened in France, visitors can enjoy seeing little Melman playing around with his mother. The birth of the baby giraffe is good news for wildlife preservation, as according to estimates, the number of the animal in the wild has dropped by about 30% since the 1980s.
The issue of marine trash has long worried scientists and environmentalists. Now a French engineer has invented a robot to help clean ocean waste. The Jellyfish Bot is a remote-controlled, electric-powered boat that helps clean rubbish from the surface of the water. It's 70 centimeters long and 70 wide, almost the size of a suitcase. The robot can collect everything from plastic bottles to masks and even oil and petrol. Despite its wide-ranging utility, Jellyfish Bot has a rather simple mechanism.
To collect trash, you have to do something as simple as possible, because otherwise, if we put too complicated mechanisms, it can get blocked and things can get stuck in the system. We designed the robot with a slide mechanism that goes towards a net, so we fill up the net, we take back the net, and that's the end of it.
The trash collecting robot is being used at around 15 ports in France, lightening the workload of local cleaners. It has also been exported to countries including Japan, Norway, and Singapore. The makers have also developed an autonomous version of the boat.
Malaysians at a vaccination center in the city of Kuching have witnessed a surprising scene. A T-Rex turned up to get his COVID-19 jab. Fitness instructor Kenny Sia dressed up in a dinosaur costume to amuse people, doesn't he look fabulous, and protect himself. Sia said he made the decision to lift up the spirits of frontline health workers, is exhausted by vaccinating over 5,000 people a day. People rushed to take pictures with him, hailing his appearance and historic and funny. A giant 3D cat has risen to fame in the Japanese capital, Tokyo, bringing joy to citizens amid the COVID-19 pandemic. A massive billboard featuring the cat has been installed in one of Tokyo's busiest districts. The realistic-looking cat on a 4K resolution screen appears every few minutes between advertisements. Depending on the time of day, the cat appears differently and sometimes meowing at people walking by. The companies that set up the billboard hope that they can cheer people up during the dark era of the coronavirus pandemic. The display has already caused a frenzy in the city and among the social platforms, with many expressing joy and amazement at the technology.
Peru is full of natural wonders worthy of appreciation in each of its regions. A zoo in the capital Lima has now unveiled an incredibly cute and adorable Andean alpaca calf to attract visitors amid dwindling zoo goers due to the coronavirus pandemic. This fairy baby alpaca named Paquita is just 1 month old and was introduced to the public on the eve of the 200th anniversary of Peru's independence from Spain. The zoo has also displayed its families of llamas, alpaca, and vicuña. The three are members of South American camelids biological family and are traditionally valued for their soft and warm wool. They live in the Andes Mountains, which lay thousands of meters above sea level. Peruvians are proud of the history of wools associated with these species, which have common ancestors with camels.
Four German tightrope walkers have set a new world highlining distance record by crossing an Arctic valley in Sweden. The group tiptoed a distance of more than 2 kilometers between two mountain peaks in Lapland barefoot. The line they walked on was set at a height of 600 meters. The four members of the team walked the line one after another successfully, despite challenges including the wind and long distance. It took 2 days for the team to rig the line between the two peaks.
A herd of elephants migrating in China have been making headlines for months. Now they have once again attracted attention. Experts monitoring the animals this week noticed two females engaged in a dramatic fight over the herd's leadership, where they kicked and bit each other. The tussle soon ended after a male elephant succeeded in calming the belligerent giants. The fight happened in China's southwestern province of Yunnan. The herd embarked on a lengthy journey last year after escaping a nature reserve and has since trekked hundreds of miles. The elephant's migration is the longest one in China's history.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A distinctive feature, no matter of humans or animals, often catches our attention. You might have heard stories about the big fat cow or other animals you love the most. Here we bring you a story about a cow for her not being big, but for being the smallest. Rani, a 23-month-old cow, is being reared on a farm near the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. She is only 20 inches tall and weighs 26 kilograms. Local vets say the little Rani has no physical problems, but will no longer gain any weight or height. The owner believes Rani is shorter than the smallest cow in Guinness World Record. The record for the smallest cow so far held by a four-year-old red cow named Manikyam from the Indian state of Kerala.
We found on the internet that the smallest known cow is living in India's Kerala, which weighs 40 kilograms, but ours weighs only 26. So we believe ours is the world's smallest. That's why we applied to the Guinness World Records. They replied to us saying they will investigate within 90 days.
The tiny cow has also caused tourist frenzy in the South Asian country as thousands are flocking to Dhaka to take a glance despite coronavirus restrictions. The owner says over 15,000 people come to visit her in just 3 days. The dwarf cow has also gone viral on social media. A nearly 22-meter-high sand sculpture in Denmark has set a new Guinness record as the world's tallest sand castle. The sculpture has been constructed with nearly 5 tons of sand. It's made in the shape of a triangle, and a wood structure stabilizes it. More than 30 artists from different countries have worked on the project, carving intricate details on the castle's wall. Its makers say a nod to the coronavirus pandemic was also made at the top of that construction. They say that's because the virus has controlled the lives of people over the past months. The sand piece broke the previous Guinness record that belonged to an 18-meter-high sand castle in Germany. An adorable baby elephant has become a web celebrity after she was caught on camera using a muddy hill as playground slide. Footage shows the little elephant excitedly approaching a hill with a smooth path leading downward. The baby then goes on all fours to have the time of her life sliding on her belly down the hill, taking full advantage of rain. The toddler, named Yishong, is only 3 years old. She lives at a rescue center in China, one of the major habitats for wild Asian elephants in the country.
A French company has taken the process of pizza making to a whole new level by creating a robot chef. The robot named Patsy is completely autonomous. The machine, now working in a pizzeria in Paris, is capable of taking orders, making a pizza from scratch and serving it. Having three arms, the robot can make 120 pizzas in an hour, which is 13 times faster than a human chef.
We are in a very fast process with a perfect control of time and quality, since you have a constancy offered by robotics and then an environment that is quite cool and relaxed. The idea is also to spend a few pleasant minutes washing the robot while you wait for your pizza to be made.
It took designers 8 years to develop the machine, which is claimed to be the first pizza-making robot in the world. They hope to use the technology to open robotics-run restaurants that can function round the clock. In China, scientists are happy that the world's first artificially bred leaf monkey is doing well 2.5 months after being born. The rare monkey was born at a research and protection center in Wuzhou City in April. Its birth took place several days earlier than the due date, and the baby was relatively weak at birth. However, thanks to its parents and caretakers, it has grown in a normal way. Scientists say the baby monkey is now in a good condition and its behavior is totally normal.
It is very important in terms of the cytic value. It has been growing up normally. In addition, we have found that it has a curiosity about the world and always shows some exploratory and learning behaviors. In general, it is in very good physical condition.
The center's scientists say another leaf monkey that was born in April is doing well too. These monkeys are the eighth generation of leaf monkeys that have been bred in captivity. Their successful births have raised hope amongst the scientists of saving a species that is one of China's most endangered wild animals. Imagine the hungriest you've ever been. How many hot dogs could you possibly gobble down in 10 minutes? An American man has done 76. Professional eater Joey Chestnut broke the world record in the International Hot Dog Eating Contest on Brooklyn's Coney Island. The 37-year-old managed to devour the first 30 hot dogs in only 3 minutes. The impressive win marked his 14th victory at the annual contest. He held the previous record, which was only one sausage sandwich, less than his 2021 record. Astronauts at China's space station have successfully carried out the country's first spacewalk. Two astronauts exited the core module of Tiangong to examine the station's robotic arm. They also elevated a panoramic camera and tested new generation spacesuits. The mission lasted 7 hours. According to the China Manned Space Agency, another spacewalk will be conducted soon. In June, three Chinese astronauts blasted off to become the first crew of the Tiangong station. They will remain there for 3 months. Pangolins might look tough with their scaly armor, but they are in fact highly vulnerable animals. A Vietnamese man is dedicating his time and energy to making sure they are safe. 39-year-old Thai has been protecting pangolins since his boyhood, when he saw one brutally hunted by his neighbors. The bitter experience inspired him to find or make a group devoted to saving the endangered species. Save Vietnam's Wildlife has over 60 staff and has so far rescued around 1,600 pangolins. Tai says seeing the rescued animals return to nature is the best part of his job.
The most wonderful moments in the lives of all of the conservationists at my center are the moments that we witness the rescued pangolins getting out from the transportation cages and slowly walking into the forest, because the forest is their true home where they can have the joy of living their lives in their own way.
Pangolins are one of the most trafficked mammals in the world. Their number have fallen due to illegal trade. The animals, now critically endangered, could once be found in the rainforests across Asia and Africa. They use their sticky tongues to hunt for ants, termites, and similar prey.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
It is a tragic paradox that while the Israeli regime settlements are clearly prohibited by international law, the international community has been remarkably reluctant to enforce its own laws, says Juan Cole, writer, in an article published under the heading UN Expert Says Illegal Israeli Regime Settlements Amount to War Crimes. Stay tuned for more. Canadian academic and the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the Palestinian territory occupied by the fake regime of Israel, Michael Link, made waves recently. Link asked nations of the world to classify the Israeli regime practice of sponsoring Israeli squatters on Palestinian-owned land on the occupied Palestinian West Bank as a war crime under the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. The special rapporteur explained, for Israel, the settlements serve two related purposes. One is to guarantee that the occupied territory will remain under Israeli control in perpetuity. The second purpose is to ensure that there will never be a genuine Palestinian state. These are exactly the reasons why the international community agreed to prohibit the practice of settler implantation when it created the Fourth Geneva Convention in 1949 and the Rome Statute in 1998. It called the Israeli squatters the engine of Israel's 54-year-old occupation, the longest in the modern world. The UN High Commission on Human Rights notes that there are now close to 300 settlements in occupied East Alvots and the West Bank, with more than 680,000 Israeli settlers. Link pointed out that the illegality of the Israeli squatter settlements is the most settled issue in the international law. The UNHCR concurs that their illegality has been confirmed by the United Nations Security Council, the Geneva Assembly, the Human Rights Council, the International Court of Justice, the International Committee of the Red Cross, and the high contracting parties to the Fourth Geneva Convention, among many other local and international governing bodies. Actually, you could just have listed the UN Security Council, since its decisions have the force of law internationally. The UNSC has branded Israeli squatter settlements illegal in a host of resolutions. The Israeli regime is alone in disputing this international consensus. But then prisons are full of convicted bank robbers who proclaim their innocence. He added, "It is a tragic paradox that while the Israeli settlements are clearly prohibited by international law, the international community has been remarkably reluctant to enforce its own laws." In December 2016, the UN Security Council reiterated its long-standing demand in Resolution 2334 that the Zionist regime must immediately and completely cease all settlement activities. Yet, since early 2017, the UN Special Coordinator for the West Asia Region peace process has reported to the Security Council on 18 consecutive occasions that the Zionist regime has taken no steps to comply with its obligations under Resolution 2334. The UNHCR summarized the Special Rapporteur's call for practical action. In his report, the Special Rapporteur called on the international community to adopt a plan of action. Number one, fully support the work of the Office of the Prosecutor of the ICC as it investigates whether the Israeli settlements violate the Rome Statute. Number two, call upon the Zionist regime to fully dismantle its settlements. Number three, develop a comprehensive menu of accountability measures to bring the Zionist regime in compliance with international law should it continue to defy the international community. Number four, ensure full accountability of the Zionist regime political, military, and administrative leaders who are responsible for grave breaches of international law in the occupied Palestinian territory. And number five, call upon all UN member states to implement the injunction of the Security Council in 1980 in Resolution 465 not to provide the Zionist regime with any assistance to be used in connection with the settlements. Link concluded, the time for criticism of the Israeli regime settlements has passed. Former Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has said only last week that it is the lack of any international legal accountability which has enabled Israel to ignore successive UN resolutions. A new approach grounded in international law is the only path to a just end to this perpetual occupation. During the Second World War, the Axis aggressors militarily occupied countries, and in some instances, they attempt to colonize the vanquished with their own population. Germany invaded and occupied Poland in 1939. The National Socialists really did not want there to be a Poland, and they had no intention of ever withdrawing, so they started throwing Poles out of their own country and replacing them with ethnic Germans. If they could have, they would just have erased Poland and made it far eastern Germany. Likewise, during the Second World War, Mussolini did not just occupy France's city of Nice and its environs, he annexed it to Italy and intended never to relinquish it. It was to prevent this sort of behavior that the framers of the Fourth Geneva Convention forbade occupiers from transferring their own populations into occupied territories. Even earlier, in 1907, Hague regulations, the occupier is forbidden to introduce substantial changes into the economy and ways of life of an occupied people. participation in the international love war was